Chapter 13, Building Your Business Model. If opportunity doesn't knock, build a door. Milton Berle. My youngest son is a Lego fanatic. Since he was old enough to hold a brick, he's been filling drawers and floors in our home with Lego bits and pieces. He loves to follow the instructions to build whatever comes in the box, but more than that, he loves taking it all apart again and making something totally original. From his brain, as he likes to say. Business models are a lot like that. Sure, there are books and articles that can complicate the issue or give you an in-depth intellectual analysis of them, but the bottom line is that your business model is made up of just a few interchangeable bricks that you can configure in a number of ways. This is where most of the background and foundational work you've been doing so far starts coming together into tangible business shifts. In fact, you've already got more than half of your business model fleshed out. Here's the brick equation I developed that simplifies the entire business model concept. In parentheses, you plus why plus who. Then, plus what plus how. Like I said, you've already got more than half of this equation handled because the entire first section of this book has been focused on getting clear on you, why you do what you do, and who your raving fans are. The last part of this equation is about your offer. What it is, and how you deliver it. We'll spend the bulk of this chapter going deep on offer creation, but before we do, let's look a little more closely at this equation. Internals versus externals. You'll notice that the first part of this business model equation is inside a set of parentheticals. That's intentional. This is all the internal work that every creative entrepreneur needs to do that rarely gets communicated to the rest of the world. Because it often goes unseen by your raving fans, it's common for creative entrepreneurs to skip this part and jump straight ahead to the offer, the what and the how. But until you know what matters to you, why you're investing yourself in doing this great work, and who will most resonate with it, every offer you slap together will fall short of your expectations, mostly because your expectations aren't grounded in reality. I skipped ahead once, and it burned! I planned a 3-day event for mom entrepreneurs. It was a great chance for them to get away, connect with other mom entrepreneurs, and hear from some pretty incredible speakers on how to grow a business from home. Did I mention I was hosting it in glorious Flint, Michigan? Yeah. I'd done part of the work. I knew what I wanted. I knew I wanted to do a live event, be on a stage, and inspire this audience of mompreneurs. I knew I wanted to bring smart, courageous women together in my hometown so that I didn't have to travel. I knew I wanted to be able to go home at the end of the evening and be with my family. But that's where I skipped ahead. Had I really listened to what my audience or raving fans wanted, it would have been clear that taking 3 days away from their families would be a challenge, that Flint, of all places, is not a destination hotspot. And while moms are more than willing to invest in their families, this particular audience had serious issues about spending that kind of money on themselves. I sold one ticket to the event and ended up canceling. On the other hand, I did my homework for Creative Freedom Live. Nashville is a regular tourist location for events and happenings, and still reasonably affordable for a major city. My marketing focus was still on carving out time to get away from the daily grind, but instead of coming for inspiration, this event helps you make a plan for the next year of your life and business. I already had clients who were interested in coming together and meeting in person, and I had a book coming out that provided a foundation for the content structure. That would be this book. In short, it was a perfect storm. But it wasn't magic, it was homework. I relocated, scouted venues, talked with clients and fans, and put that data to use in a format that people could consume. I created an offer that resonated. The what was a live planning workshop. The how was an in-person experience in Nashville. I then made a variation in the offer by taking the planning workshop into an online environment. The what was still a live planning retreat, but the how became a live streaming workshop hosted on social media. Why the change? Because I wanted to reach a different segment of my audience, the folks who couldn't or wouldn't be able to travel, but still wanted the hands-on help to build their growth plan. I was able to reach even more people, grow my audience, and increase my revenue at the same time. Same what, different how. I then sold the recordings of the workshop to yet a different audience, the ones that can't make it to a live event, but want the ability to do the work on their own at a time that works for them. Same what, different how. Once you've done the internal work, then you can focus on the externals, the offer and the mode of delivery, the what and the how. What is an offer? That's both a question and a statement. An offer, the what, is made up of two components, what you're willing to provide and what you're accepting in return. It's what you give and what they give, even if they're not giving it directly to you. But the what isn't always what you think it is. Take this book. On the surface, it appears that the offer is a book in exchange for the cover price. But really, it's not. Let me explain. The book itself is part of the how. It's the delivery vehicle. It's just like the workshop, same what, different how. But the contents of the book make a promise that you'll be able to build your growth plan for the next 12 months. It's that promise that you're buying, the results of that promise more specifically. You're not buying a book, you're ultimately buying the result that the book claims to provide. In exchange for that result, I'm asking not only the cover price, I'm asking for your time and attention, your labor, your willingness to do the work. Suddenly, that cover price seems small in comparison, right? If I'm asking that much of you, my book better deliver. What you give. Your side of the offer is going to address one or more of these elements. Results or benefits, not features. They are part of the how. Transformation away from pain. Pursuit of pleasure. Essentially, your side of the offer is what makes their life better. If you're a musician, your music may not ease a specific pain point, but you might be offering empathy, empowerment, insight, courage, confidence, or any other number of emotions that leave your raving fans feeling even better than they did before they heard your music. What they give. The other half of the offer is the compensation package. What are you asking from your audience in exchange for what you're providing? Yes, you probably want to get paid, but what else are you asking? If you're a graphic designer, do you need their time and attention to help make decisions about your design work? Do you want them to rave about you to their colleagues? Another consideration, do you want that compensation to go to you or someone else? Many socially conscious companies donate a portion of their proceeds from a sale to a chosen charity. During the hurricane season of 2017, I knew several entrepreneurs donating products and services to their audiences in exchange for a donation in support of relief efforts. Whether or not the compensation comes directly to you or your company is irrelevant. Ultimately, there are only five things you can ask for as part of your compensation package. Time and attention, labor, effort. Permission, like your mailing list. Currency, payment or donation. Approval/validation, testimonial. Trust/reputation enhancement, referral. Look at all the possible offer combinations that you can create. Look at all the possible offer combinations that you can create. Mixing and matching these elements can give you a lot of options, which is why it's so important to remember the internals. If you're driving toward your enoughness number, you'll naturally want currency as part of your compensation, for example. But if you're trying to grow your mailing list, you may want to make an offer that's focused solely on permission. On the other hand, if you're floating a new offer into the world, you may want to offer it for a lower price in order to get some testimonials on the board. When I taught the live workshop on social media, my compensation package looked like this. Time and attention to watch the sessions and do the work. Permission to get on my mailing list for updates, which was optional. Currency, which was optional, only if they wanted to purchase the recordings. Trust, asking them to like, share, and tell their friends during the live sessions. Some people voluntarily provided testimonials during the sessions, while others did not. I didn't ask for them as part of my compensation plan, so that was a bonus for me. Once you've decided on what you're willing to give and what you want in exchange, you can then decide how you're going to deliver it. For example, if you want permission, you'll need to deliver your offer through some mechanism that allows you to collect permission. A sign-up or permission form, an email list, or simply collecting business cards. I once saw an event presenter ask people to pass their business card to the center of the aisle if they wanted a copy of the notes from their presentation. The presenter then walked down the aisle collecting stacks of cards, making their way to the back of the room. It was quick and easy for the attendees, and the presenter walked out with permission from everyone who handed in their card. Easy peasy. Resonant pricing. When it comes to the currency piece of the offer, I get a lot of questions about pricing. In most cases, creative entrepreneurs are grossly underpricing because they're accustomed to people asking them to do work for free, or worse, for exposure. People die from exposure, yo. Don't let that be you. There's a time and a place for free. Typically, when you're asking for permission or trust in lieu of payment. That's where the whole exposure thing comes into play. When Oprah Winfrey launched her The Life You Want tour, her team reached out to artists local to her tour stops and invited them to perform on an outdoor stage for free. The idea being that these folks would get plenty of exposure, build their resumes, and it might lead to additional paid performance opportunities in the future, just not with Oprah. When Oprah's team reached out to Bay Area hula hoop artist Revolva with this standard exposure offer, she negotiated for something more. Oprah's team came back with a willingness to cover travel expenses. When Revolva pushed back for a fair wage, Oprah's team replied that they had filled the stage and that the next time they had a bigger budget, they'd keep her in mind. Excuse me? Oprah's tour had her speaking in venues that had a capacity in the tens of thousands. The lowest price ticket was $99. The highest was a VIP seat in the $1,000 range. With other big name speakers appearing on the same stage, I get that there may not have been a huge budget for these other performers, but there should have been something. Revolva didn't need permission or trust. She already had it, or Oprah's people wouldn't have been reaching out. To her, this was just another example of someone devaluing her work by choosing not to pay for her great work. Her open letter to Oprah was a wildfire burning across the internet for weeks afterward. On the other hand, electric violinist Dave Kim saw things differently. Having previously performed at a local, unpaid TEDx event in the Bay Area, Dave saw value in saying yes to the Oprah tour invitation. His TEDx credentials gave him the justification he thought he needed to raise his corporate rates, and saw how Oprah's tour opportunity might do the same. Same event, two different perspectives on pricing, and neither is wrong. Say what? You heard me. They are both right. Revolva's values dictated that if someone who had the means approached her and asked her to work for free, then the proper answer is hell no. Dave's values dictated that if there was a strong possibility for reaching a new or larger audience and getting paid more down the line, then the proper answer is hell yes, regardless of whether the person asking had the means to pay him. When it comes to determining your resonant pricing, beyond the ethical and moral considerations of your core values, there are three components that go into every pricing decision. Your lifestyle. As a creative entrepreneur, your enoughness number and the lifestyle you want for yourself makes a big difference in your pricing. One of my clients was a therapist living in the San Francisco Bay Area. This is one of the most expensive real estate markets in the United States, and she was charging $160 per hour to see clients. With two roommates, her share of the monthly rent was $1,700. That meant she had to see 10 clients per month just to pay her rent. When we worked on her enoughness number, it became clear that sharing her living space wasn't her dream scenario, and charging $160 per hour would mean working all the time in order to pay her rent. I suggested $500 per hour, but she wasn't confident that she could keep her practice full at that rate, so we compromised. She raised her rate to $250. The irony is that there are therapists in her market who struggle to charge $160 per hour. Several of her colleagues tried to dissuade her from raising her rates because of their understanding of, quote unquote, what the market will bear. What the market will bear is often a lowest common denominator approach to marketing. Apple, Starbucks, and Tesla all dumped the world on its head when they announced pricing well above what the market was currently bearing for products in their markets. A $5 cup of coffee was highway robbery before Starbucks made coffee an experience instead of a commodity. A year later, my client was right. All the clients she had previously worked with at $160 were no longer in her practice. She had replaced all of them and added a few more that were paying her new $250 rate. Seeing this, she immediately realized that she could raise her rates to $400 an hour with any new clients she enrolled without hurting her existing book of business. If you can't live on the money you're making from your offers, Could it be that your pricing doesn't accurately reflect the lifestyle you're trying to live? Take a moment to do the math. If you need $5,000 per month to live and you're charging $100 for an offer, you'll need to sell 100 of them every month if you use the profit first method to pay yourself. Where will you find 100 people every month to buy your stuff? Positioning. If you were to compare the buying experience of your offers to other offers in the world, where is your product positioned? Are you more like Walmart or Tiffany? Starbucks or Tom's Shoes? How are you positioning your offers in the marketplace? Remember John Frieda from Chapter 2? You can't position a cheapy product in a luxury salon and have it sell well. Your pricing needs to be positioned to match the expectations of your ideal client. If you're positioning your business in the middle of the market, your pricing needs to reflect that. If you're creating a unique experience, your pricing needs to reflect that. How exactly do you do that? Your pricing mythology. Pricing mythology and stories. I'll concede that it's a challenge to bring a familiar product to market with prices that are remarkably higher than expected. And yet, it happens all the time. The stories of Kobe beef, where cows are fed beer and massaged daily, are used to justify the higher prices. Kobe is a specific, pricier type of Wagyu beef, and as of this writing, Wagyu currently sells for about $110 per pound, and Kobe is selling for nearly 10 times that amount, while regular grass-fed beef here in the States runs about $21 per pound for finer cuts. To be clear, you're not telling lies about your offers. The word mythology should not imply fabrication, but rather the collection of stories and beliefs about you, your company, or your offerings that have become part of the foundation of who you are. Much like your origin, phoenix, and hero's journey stories, these stories about your offerings are also part of your pricing mythology. They are the reasons why you choose to price your offers as you do. For example, Tiffany makes it clear in their mythology that you cannot buy a Tiffany blue box. No sum of money can get them to part with a single box. In fact, when they opened on a special Sunday to film breakfast at Tiffany's, they hired extra security to protect not the jewelry, but their boxes instead. While you can't buy an empty box for any amount of money, Tiffany is happy to give you a box free, so long as you buy something to put in it. What are the stories you tell about your offers, and how do they paint the picture of your pricing and positioning? One client of mine hand-dipped her dyed silk scarves, not once, but twice, which gave them a richer appearance. She also pressed them by hand. That's not an uncommon practice for garment makers, and because of it, most people don't tell the story. But by telling the stories of her small batch, hand-dyed, double-dipped custom silk scarves, and how each one is lovingly pressed by hand, she positions her product to have a higher value in the marketplace than other run-of-the-mill scarf makers. Advertising legend Claude Hopkins crafted one of the best and most famous marketing mythologies for Schlitz beer. Nearly 100 years ago, every brewery in the U.S. was shouting claims about how pure their beer was. They all used the same process, however, so no one was keen to promote it. Except Hopkins. When he discovered all the steps that went into brewing and purifying beer, he told that story in his advertising copy for Schlitz, the beer that made Milwaukee famous, according to another ad campaign. Say what you will about Schlitz today, back then it ran neck and neck with the king of beers for market dominance. Mythology stories like the one Hopkins wrote were a huge contributing factor. Even if it seems like no big deal to you, stories about your process can be a big deal to your audience, especially if they've never been told before. What seems commonplace to you might seem amazing to your audience when they get a chance to peek behind the curtain. Marketing strategy. Telling those stories takes a bit of practice, but with time, they become a staple in your marketing strategy. The key is to connect stories to an understanding of why it matters to your audience. Massaged cows, hand-dipped scarves, and a 50-year history of making beer mean nothing to your audience by themselves. It's what those stories represent. More flavorful beef, a gorgeous scarf that's as unique as you are, and better drinking beer are what matters. Your stories bring the reasons into resonance. Like the other building blocks, your marketing strategy can also be distilled into a few simple components: the message, the voice, the platform. Whatever story you're telling has to be told by someone somewhere. When you figure out who's saying what and what platform they're saying it on, you've got the foundation for a marketing strategy. For example, Wendy's tapped their founder, Dave Thomas, to speak about the wholesome nature and great value of their food, but hired Clara Peller to play the grumpy old lady to go head-to-head with their competition in the Where's the Beef commercials. Different message, different voice, same platform, television. In most cases, you'll be using your own voice to share your message with your audience, but not always. Sometimes you'll want to feature your clients, fans, or even your colleagues as they share their reviews, raves, and recommendations. Like positioning, however, you'll want to be sure the voice fits the message and the platform. Can you imagine Dave Thomas shouting, "Where's the beef?" It just doesn't land the same. We're about to take a closer look at platforms when we dig into the how, which is about the delivery modes of your offer. You can market on different platforms than you actually deliver, which is why I mentioned them here. You can't get a burger through your television, but about $385 million were spent on Super Bowl ads in 2017, including a 30-second ad from Wendy's. The how, delivering your offer. Again, the modular bricks of this part of the offer are easy to grasp. You're only looking at two elements: the platform, the delivery system. That's it. Two elements that you can use to create a number of combinations. In the case of Wendy's, for example, their platform for delivery is their network of locations. The delivery system is a personal delivery of the food and drink you order, either at the indoor ordering counter or outside in the drive-thru. Other restaurants may bring the food to your table, or maybe there's a buffet where you serve yourself. Those are all delivery systems, a way to get the thing you've paid for. Platforms and delivery systems. In all those cases, however, the platform is the building where the food is located. As I said before, Wendy's can't get their burger through the television, but they can use the television as a platform to market to potential audience members who are likely to visit their building to order their food. There are also other platform options, like having Uber Eats pick up your food and deliver it directly to your customer. My favorite Ethiopian restaurant doesn't have the ability to provide a delivery service on their own. The overhead and insurance are too cost prohibitive. Instead, they've partnered with Uber Eats to have their drivers provide their food to their customers in exchange for a small fee. This looks like a delivery system, and it is, but it's Uber's delivery system and the restaurant's platform. The Ethiopian restaurant uses the Uber Eats app platform to get their products sold. The food is delivered by the restaurant while still inside their store to the driver, not the customer. It's the driver that then provides final delivery of the food through Uber's delivery system. Admittedly, this can look a little complex, but it's no different than wholesaling your offers to a third party who then marks it up for sale in their establishment. Your platform is their store, while your delivery system is the act of wholesaling it to them in the first place. For example, every time I sell a copy of my book on Amazon, they handle the printing and shipping for me. They are both my platform and delivery system. On the other hand, if someone buys the book through my website and I pass that order to Amazon for fulfillment, then my website is the platform and Amazon is my delivery system. If someone sees the book on Amazon but buys a signed copy from me in person, then Amazon was the marketing platform, but I am the ordering platform and delivery system. Platform is basically the place you go to get or market the thing, whilst the delivery system is the way in which you get it. It's a slight but important distinction. In this way, a vending machine is both the platform and the delivery vehicle. As I've mentioned before, this can be as simple or as complex as you make it, with multiple platforms and distribution channels. Or you can keep it simple: digital downloads, delivery system, of your songs that are only available on iTunes platform, for example. As you're assessing your offers, consider not only how you are currently delivering them, but other ways that might also work. Before recorded music, the only way to enjoy your favorite tunes was to listen to them live. Before radio, the only way to enjoy music of your favorite performer was to either watch them live or have a recording. Now, you can hear your favorite artists in a variety of formats, delivery systems, from a variety of places, platforms, including live, assuming they're still living, of course. At one time, copies of art were considered forgeries, and now, limited edition prints of an original work are a commonplace, more affordable way to make the artist's work more accessible to a larger audience. In the internet marketing world, where I've spent most of the last 20 years, affiliate relationships and joint venture partnerships, JVs, are all the rage. In essence, you team up with others to help promote your offerings in exchange for a commission. It's an exchange of trust, permission, and currency that capitalizes on the partner's existing audience relationship. Basically, you don't have to do the work of finding the audience because you're relying on your partner's platform for that. If they're only helping to promote, it's an affiliate relationship like Uber Eats. If they're also participating in the offer, it's a JV partnership. Tony Bennett is probably the best known JV partner in the world. His collection of Duets albums, Duets, Duets 2, and Viva Duets, have him partnering with some of the biggest names in music, which not only helps to bolster his career, but also puts him in front of audiences that might not otherwise know his music. The benefit for the partner is not only financial compensation, but the added benefit of working with a legend in the music industry and getting their voice heard by an audience that might not otherwise listen to their music. There's not typically a lot of crossover in the fan bases of artists like Tony Bennett and Lady Gaga, at least not until they do a duet together. What different ways can you bring your great work to your people? Remember, it's not your job to tell them how to consume it. It's your job to get them to consume it in a way that works for them. If your what and how don't match up with what works for your audience, don't be surprised if nobody shows up. Remember, I matter, you matter, we matter. We have to strike the balance between what works for you and what works for your audience. Your assignment. Take one of your products or services and hold it up to your business model. Do the internals and externals match up? If not, what needs to change? Review the what and how of your offers. Do they work well together? If not, what needs to change? Are you asking too much from your raving fans, or do you need to ask for more? Examine your lifestyle needs in relation to your pricing. Do you need to make adjustments so that your offers can actually provide for the lifestyle you'd like to live? What are the stories and mythologies of you, your company, and your offers that you can start sharing with your audience? Look for stories that help reinforce the positioning you're trying to establish in the marketplace. What's your marketing strategy for offers? What platform will you use to spread your marketing message? Get clear on what's being said about you, your company, and your offers. Then decide who needs to be saying those things, mythologies, marketing, etc., and what platforms you'll use to spread those messages. Celebrate. You've done quite a bit of work so far, and it's about to start paying off.